This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Steve Odlin. He's the former CEO of Office Depot, and Patrick Callen, the founding president of the National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education. They will talk about higher education in Louisiana. They're here for a major summit, and we'll talk with Steve Odlin and Patrick Callen when we begin in a few minutes. Also on the show, Tim Muffett, the maestro for the Baton Rouge Symphony for the last dozen years. A big week for the symphony with the multiple Tony Award winner Audra McDonald coming to town this Friday. And Jessica Wapner, her book is The Philadelphia Chromosome, a mutant gene in the quest to cure cancer at the genetic level. All this, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and thank you for your support today and particularly for this hour of programming, and we appreciate your contributions to WRKF. 297-5633-877-217-5757. Those are your numbers. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. The Committee for Economic Development is in town to host a higher education summit with a committee of 100 Louisiana. Today's keynoter at noon at the Hilton is Steve Odlin. He's the former CEO of Office Depot and of AutoZone, and he has a passion for higher education. And he is joined in studio with us by Patrick Callen, founding president of the National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education. Steve is the president and chief executive officer of the Committee for Economic Development. Good morning to both of you, gentlemen.
Morning, Jim. Morning. Thanks for having us.
And you have come a ways to be in Baton Rouge. Patrick came from San Francisco, and Steve from the nation's capital. I think I have that right. And higher education is an issue that permeates our culture, particularly in this state. And I know you have followed the travails of higher education around the country with budget issues. How do we look as far as a country, and in particular, what's your message going to be to the folks in Baton Rouge today?
Well, Jim, the Committee for Economic Development is a very old and prestigious group of CEOs and academic leaders around the country. We've been around since 1942 when we came together and provided some of the original thinking around the Bretton Woods Agreement and the Marshall Plan. And education has been a passion of the business community for a very long period of time. You know, when we look at higher education, we're worried, frankly, around the country, and hence we're getting out and working with business groups, and this is our second time in Louisiana. We were earlier in New Orleans meeting with the group there. Essentially, we're not producing the same number of college grads or post-secondary education grads that we have in the past, and we're particularly concerned about the age group of 25 to 34-year-olds. And if you look at the rankings, the OECD rankings, we have slipped. We used to be number one in graduating young people, but we now are down at 15th on the list, 1-5, 15th. And we've been passed by Japan, Korea, and New Zealand, Denmark, all these other nations. So
why?
We're worried.
Why has that happened?
You know, that it's a good question. We're just not graduating enough people. Part of it is funding, part of it is interest, and we've got to get back to it. And it's not just the elite institutions or the four-year schools that we're talking about. We're talking about the trade schools and the broad access institutions. Mm-hmm. And so in the business community, we're concerned because we're not getting people with the right skill sets to populate our companies.
What can the business community do to be a catalyst?
So, it's a great question, and I think that no two communities are alike and no two business communities are alike, so there isn't a prescription that we're trying to offer, but we're urging business communities around the country to get involved. We're urging them to work with their state officials and their local officials to set explicit goals, to develop strategic financial plans, because ultimately, as you know, it does come down to funding, and people do need access and some help. We also have urged state officials to undertake policy audits and make sure that those institutions are accountable politically, and that the corporations then support funding through their own foundations and through their own tuition reimbursement plans. But all of this is necessary. And, I know people think of higher education as, well, you know, let's all go to LSU. Mm-hmm. But it's way beyond that. It's community colleges, it's technical schools, and so forth. And we can go into, you know, some of the areas of concern for us in terms of skill gaps.
Okay. Steve Odlin, the former CEO of Home Depot and of AutoZone, and he's made a bit of a turn in his career. Graduate of the University of Notre Dame, by the way, and a master's from Northwestern in Evanston, Illinois. And Patrick Callen, who's spent his career in California, a state noted for its higher education system. He was executive director of the California Higher Education Policy Center from 92 to 97. You've got your own challenges in your home state right now. This is something that we hear much about in Louisiana as far as the budget being starved for higher education, but it's a nationwide phenomenon, isn't it?
That's right. The whole country is challenged, and it's largely because we've always, people in California, Louisiana, other states, have always wanted good education, and they've always wanted good opportunity for their young people. But what's happened is the economy has changed and the world has changed, so it's highly improbable that people can, in this world, have a middle class, a job that supports a middle class standard of living without some education or training beyond high school. As Steve said, it might be a technical school. So that means we have to get more people better educated than we have before. It's more of a matter of survival now. It's a matter of our standard of living. And much of the rest of the world has caught on to this. While the United States was fairly complacent. That's why we've fallen behind. I mean, in most of my life, on almost anything you could measure about higher education, how many people went to college, how many people had mm-hmm. degrees, the U.S. was number one, and now, as Steve has indicated, we're dropping. So we have to get very, very serious about this, and the business community is key to making that happen, and that's what TED's message has been.
You referenced the gap. What are you talking about when you say there's a gap?
Well, first of all, you know, if you take Pat's numbers, I mean, the numbers are, if you don't graduate from high school, you can be expected to live a life that's relatively in poverty. If you do graduate from high school, it's a good thing. You can mm-hmm. expect to hit the national averages, roughly $40,000-$45,000 a year. If you graduate from college, then your expectancy and salary goes up to $80,000-$85,000, and then, you know, with master's degrees or PhDs, of course, it's well beyond that. So this is the great education is the great equalizer in our country. So from a business standpoint, you know, what we're seeing is even through the depth of this financial crisis, where unemployment hit generational highs, we couldn't find enough people with the right skill sets. And so those skill sets are across the board. IT is one of the main areas of hiring, and the projections of need for people who understand cybersecurity in the next 10 years is skyrocketing. But beyond that, just basic accounting. You know, we've got too many lawyers, but not enough paralegals. Healthcare assistance, nursing, elder care, virtually any of the STEM areas, science, technology, engineering, and math is STEM. So all of those areas need some work.
All right. Steve Odlin, the former CEO of AutoZone and of Office Depot and a graduate of Notre Dame, how much of an impact did that education you received at Notre Dame and later at Northwestern, how much did that have on your ascension to high places in the business world?
Well, it contributed totally to it. I think, you know, if I look at my own life, I'm very fortunate, and it was education that gave me the possibility to do the things that I have done. And I truly believe that we're all capable of doing many things, and people are very smart, but it comes down to education, and we need to help provide that for our kids.
Squelly in Scotlandville, good morning. You're on with Steve Odlin and Patrick Callen. Hi, Squelly.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just want to say what an excellent topic that you have today. I'll jump right in and say that, in my opinion, I think that popular culture here in the United States, where we have industries that can make money without a need for a higher education, for instance, we have musical artists that become millionaires overnight if they just create a popular song or things of that nature, whereas in these other countries where they still have a need to develop their quality of living, for instance, developing a better way to live, solar power.
All right. What's your assessment as far as Quelley's remarks about, I think he was getting at the fact that most of us at some point in our life would like to be a great entertainer or athlete. Education may not be a priority for somebody who at that level probably is after they're through with their careers, but do we have an unrealistic emphasis on things that are unachievable for most people in our society?
No, this is an excellent point, and we don't want to peanut butter this thing and say everybody should be the same and everybody should fit into the same mold, because there are so many different walks of life and we should celebrate all of them. I think that that the point is, if you've got that kind of talent, then by all means you should chase your career goals. But I think when you come back and you look at the business community and the needs of our economy and growth, there are a lot of gaps here. And our point is, we need to help support our kids and give them the education that previous generations have had.
We're going to take a short break, and we will return for a few minutes with Steve Odlin and Patrick Callen, and also hear from the maestro, Tim Muffett, after this pause on 89.3 WRKI. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. The maestro, Tim Muffett, is on deck, but we want to have a few more words from Patrick Callen, founding president of the National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education, and Steve Odlin, former CEO of Office Depot and of AutoZone, and now Steve is the president and chief executive officer of the Committee for Economic Development. Today at noon, Steve is the keynoter at the Hilton downtown, and he'll be talking about higher education in this country and in our state. Now, Patrick Callen, who is, unlike Steve, not a graduate of Notre Dame, but he went to some fine universities in the Golden State, including Santa Clara, Stanford, and Cal Irvine. Higher education is important wherever we live, and in California there's often been an emphasis on the great higher education system there. As we noted, it has challenges, and those challenges are indicative of the kind of challenges we're having around the country in Louisiana. How can we develop some kind of national strategy regarding the issues that are at stake here?
Well, the first step is to recognize the urgency of the problem. The president, President Obama, some of the major national foundations have pointed out that we are falling behind the rest of the world, and that we, in a sense, haven't taken that problem as seriously as we might. That is, the reason we're falling behind is because this has been a much higher priority in other parts of the world, and they're the parts of the world we often compete with for good jobs and for a high standard of living. And so, you know, the CED report basically doesn't say everyone should get the same education, but it does say that most people without some education or training more than high school are going to be at a huge disadvantage. And the second point, I think, is that there is no reason that America should be behind in a field like education. That is, there's, unless we believe our people lack the talent or the drive or the capability of places in these other parts of the world, we have to attribute this gap to some extent to lack of opportunity.
And what will you convey today, or try to?
Well,
Steve?
You know, Jim, the Committee for Economic Development has been working on this issue for a very long time. We have about 150 trustees who are CEOs and university presidents, and we just believe that education is the great equalizer. But we do believe that you know, everybody is not the same, and that people should have different approaches at it. You know, when we talk about post-secondary education, a lot of people just think about four-year universities. But in fact, in the business community, what we're advocating is, you know, that's great, and that's for a lot of people. But we want to see people get skills training, you know, technical training in the trades field. So we've got a shortage of electricians, a shortage of plumbers, a shortage of, auto technicians. In the IT area, the needs are booming. So as I've mentioned before, cybersecurity, accounting, paralegals, the whole medical field is booming. And so it's not that we need more lawyers and doctors, but we need all of the various technically trained people below that. Pilots are shorted. So when we talk post-secondary, we're talking about all of these kinds of training fields, technical and others, associate degrees, but we need post-secondary, which means post-high school education.
Well, thank you for joining us today. And once again, if anybody's downtown or would like to hear more from Steve Odland and from Patrick Cowan, Steve's the keynoter today at the Hilton downtown at noon, and he is president of the Committee for Economic Development. Mr. Patrick Cowan has been involved in higher education for some time. He is president of the Higher Education Policy Institute. Thank you, gentlemen, and I know the cab's waiting for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Literally. Take care. And coming Friday at the River Center, the Baton Rouge Symphony will be in full bloom with one of the great entertainers in the world today, Audra McDonald.
Somewhere in a lullaby, somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare really do come true.
Audra McDonald, graduate of the Juilliard School, 1993, and born in Berlin, raised in Fresno, California, and she is coming this way, multiple Tony Award winner, one of the fine entertainers in the world today. When you think of the versatility as an actress and as a singer, there are few in her class, and Tim Muffet has made it possible. Is the maestro at the Baton Rouge Symphony. This is quite a coup getting her to come to Baton Rouge.
How we are so excited about this. I mean, she is just first class in every way, and as you just heard in that beautiful arrangement, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, taking that simple song and turning it into something really magnificent.
And I'm not trying to make Tim embarrassed, but the guy Steve Odland, the president, former president of AutoZone and of Office Depot, he knew Tim Muffet was.
How about that?
He says, "You got Tim Muffet coming on? Yeah, I want to meet this guy." And Tim is known around the country. In fact, the Orange County Register, that's a newspaper in California last time I checked, says Muffet exudes integrity and passion throughout. That's what you strive for, isn't it?
That's every time. That's what we strive for. And you know that? That's exactly what I would say about Audra McDonald as well. And that's interesting that you chose that quote, because when I think about what makes her a special artist, it's exactly that. Integrity and passion, and we're just so thrilled to have her with us here.
Well, she ranks with some of the fine performers you've had, and you've had some noted in the classical world and also in the pop world. Diana Ross.
Not too shabby, huh?
Not too shabby in her beautiful red dress, right?
How about that?
Yeah. So I'm sure Audra will be a sight to behold. Beautiful woman, too, in addition to being fantastic performer.
There is that, yes.
So you will see and hear quite an exceptional person on stage with Tim Muffet, who I'm sure will be attired by none other than Manuel Martinez.
Of course, I don't leave home without
without Manuel.
Exactly.
Without your tailor.
Right.
But this is a culmination of a great season you've had.
It is, and it's also, this is a culmination of, this is our 10th anniversary of the Pennington Great Performers in Concert Series, which is made possible by the Pennington Foundation. And so we did two of these performances this year. Diana Ross was one, and then Audra the second, as part of our 10th anniversary celebration. And it's a great time to reflect on what the foundation has made possible for us here in Baton Rouge, for this community to experience. Itzhak Perlman, Yo-Yo Ma, Renee Fleming, the list goes on and on. And so it's been exciting to look back at that on this occasion.
Now, quite often people like yours truly, we get excited about these big names coming, and you have people who are big names in the classical world who may not have the cachet as somebody who's known universally like Audra McDonald, but some of the people you've had on that stage are truly exceptional performers in every way.
Well, that is, you know, that's a bar we shoot for with every appointment of guest artists. The level of talent out there in the music world right now is extraordinarily high, and especially people trying to earn a living as soloists, it's a very, mm-hmm. very competitive market. So, yeah, we do, we always shoot for the best.
Does the people who work for you, work with you, those mm-hmm. on stage with you, those great musicians, do they get juiced up?
Oh, you bet.
Somebody like Audra McDonald's there?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's a reason why Audra McDonald is one of the most talked about artists on the planet today, and because she's really great. This isn't hype. This isn't, this is the real deal, and our musicians very much plug into that as soon as the music making begins.
She's known in the opera world. She's really a versatile singer.
She can sing. Her biggest thing in the opera world has been Porgy and Bess most recently, but she's sung many roles from the operatic repertoire. I think that's probably where she got her start at Juilliard, was looking at that. She's a remarkably versatile person. We've all seen her on television. We've seen her in the movies, on Broadway, recordings, and can work really in just so many different styles.
Became a three-time Tony Award winner by her 28th birthday.
How about that?
And has won, I think, two more Tonys since then. So mm-hmm. she's been recognized for her talent, and she just doesn't perform anywhere. I know she's got an engagement in New Orleans later after the Baton Rouge one, but it's nice that she's in Louisiana.
And I don't think that's with the orchestra either. I think this is her orchestral date. I was just in New York City 2 weeks ago, and there are life-size posters of Audra all up and down Broadway.
Doesn't that make you feel good?
It makes us feel really good that she just did a Live from Lincoln Center performance last week. And so, you know, I feel like we're really bringing a world-class experience here to our friends and neighbors and family in Baton Rouge. And you don't even have to go get on an airplane. Just come down to the River Center and check it out.
Well, at the 2010 BCS National Championship game, Audra McDonald sang America the Beautiful for fans who were watching all over the United States. And Kevin has, is that right? He's found something with Stephen Colbert. Did those two collaborate? Audra McDonald and Stephen Colbert? Are you kidding me?
I really can't stand.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go
but
away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has
you drop
so
in.
Very nice.
I'll take your hands there just like
my
ice.
Will start
beautiful,
to
what's
worry.
Your hurry?
And Father will be
listen to the fireplace. Roar.
So, really, I got
beautiful, please
scurry.
Don't hurry.
Well, maybe just half a drink.
Put
more.
Some records on while I pour.
The neighbors might think
baby, it's
all right, I think we've heard enough.
He's amazing. Colbert is amazing. And I do think he's got some musical training, too. I remember it somewhere in the recesses of my memory, he's got some musical background.
So are you going to try to sing with her?
I will not be singing with her, no. We're going to leave that to the professionals.
Mm-hmm. Well, she is exceptional in every way, and I'm sure she'll put on quite a performance. What's up next after Audra?
Well, you know, we just had a really successful collaboration with the Rural Life Museum last weekend, and a wonderful outdoor concert with the V-Tones. The reason I bring that up, even though it just happened, is we're talking about, you know, how can we hopefully move forward with that project, because everybody had a great time at that event. And then now it's really working towards kicking off next season and getting our ducks in a row to start up yet another season. And we're very excited about what we have going on next season.
Well, and I'm sure at some point you'll be able to reveal it right here on
the
show.
I'd be happy to, yes.
There are some seats available, obviously limited, but to see and hear Audra, there is a chance.
There is, and I would encourage you that it'd be better to come and hear it rather than wish you did. And I think this is a truly special night. She has a way with an audience, and this will be a great night to be in the concert hall.
Well, it's an exceptional night for the city of Baton Rouge, and Tim's been doing this for a dozen years now.
Yes, 1999 I started, so
well,
we're a little over a dozen.
That's 14 years.
Yes.
So I think you. We talked about this last time. You may be the longest serving conductor now for the Baton Rouge Symphony.
You know, I have not checked that statistic, but I think I should.
Got to be close, but I think you're there, and it's been a testament to you that you have stayed here in Baton Rouge, and of course there have been ups and downs here, but. The symphony has been one of the ups. It's really been an outstanding staple in our community.
Well, one thing I can say about the people of Baton Rouge is that they understand the importance and they really value the arts. There's no question about that. And we're very fortunate to be making music in a place where we're really appreciated.
All right. And for those who would like to attend, obviously you can call the River Center and the symphony number.
Call us at the symphony office. 383-0500, or you can go to brso.org and check it out online.
225-383-0500. That's 225-383-0500 for Tim Muffett with Audra McDonald and the Baton Rouge Symphony. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Our guest is Jessica Wapner. She's a freelance science writer focused mainly on healthcare and medicine. And her debut book is The Philadelphia Chromosome, A Mutant Gene and the Quest to Cure Cancer at the Genetic Level. This is a book that has gained much attention since it debuted this week. Jessica brings a history behind many headlines vividly to life, recreating a sequence of scientific and medical discoveries that brought about the first ever successful treatment of a lethal cancer at the genetic level. The book opens in 1959. What happened in 1959, 54 years ago, that's relevant to this day, Jessica Wapner?
In 1959, two scientists, Peter Knoll and David Hungerford, spotted through their regular old microscope an abnormally small chromosome in blood cells from patients with a rare fatal blood cancer called chronic myeloid leukemia. That moment marked the first time anybody was seeing a concrete connection between cancer and genetics. And in our modern time, in our current time, we're understanding more and more that cancer is a genetic disease. That was the first moment of a glimpse toward that.
It's the story of a Philadelphia chromosome that is truly the story of modern cancer biology. You have a half century's worth of research transformed, affecting a lethal form of cancer into a chronic treatable condition. How was this done?
It took years, and what's amazing is that nobody knew at the time that that's where the research was leading to. All the scientists that I write about in the story were asking their own questions about whatever they happened to be working on. Eventually, that built up into a picture of how this chromosome leads to chronic myeloid leukemia, or CML. Once that picture was known, then doctors and scientists started to wonder, could we make a drug to target that root cause?
50,000 people every year are diagnosed with CML, aren't they?
Worldwide, yes. In the U.S., it's about 5,000 people per year, so it's pretty rare.
And because of what happened in 1959 and thereafter, this condition is now one that is no longer a death sentence.
That's right. Ironically, it's the one type of cancer where an increased prevalence of the disease is a good sign, right? Because people keep being diagnosed with the disease, but they don't die. So there's more people alive with CML than ever before, but that's a good thing.
What is the rate now for fatality of people who are diagnosed?
Well, it's hard to say because the experiment still goes on, right? Because Gleevec, the drug that I write about in this book, was approved in 2001. So every day that patients are still alive is another day in the experiment. So we really don't know the concrete survival rate. But the five-year survival rate is around 70%.
The book is The Philadelphia Chromosome, A Mutant Gene and the Quest to Cure Cancer at the Genetic Level. And Jessica Wapner has been writing about science and cancer for some time, all kinds of cancer. How is what happened with this particular kind of cancer applicable to other types?
It's very applicable because it changed the way that we think about treating cancer. It just transformed the landscape. This story brings us to this current moment in cancer research where people are trying to find the genetic underpinnings of cancer, so the mutations that are driving the disease, and then trying to find drugs to block those mutations at the whatever protein the gene encodes or the mechanism is connected to the mutation, right? Because the drug I write about doesn't target the gene, it targets the protein, the mutant protein encoded by the gene. And that is the major thrust of cancer research, that cancer is, at its root, a genetic disease. This story was the first time that the principle was proven, that if you know the root cause, you can create a drug to block it.
A genetic disease, but one that also is influenced by uses of tobacco. People who are obese have a higher incidence of cancer, people who have a poor diet. How much of it is lifestyle in addition
to that? It's so difficult to say. I mean, there's always these instances of people who smoke their whole lives and don't get cancer, right? And people who get lung cancer who never smoked. So, you know, there's still a puzzle there of how the environment impacts our DNA.
Now, the story of the week, as you know, it's front page in the New York Times and just about every other newspaper in America today after an op-ed piece in the New York Times yesterday from the actress Angelina Jolie, who lives in New Orleans with Brad Pitt and their kids, lots of kids. She had a double mastectomy at the age of 37 by choice. She hasn't been diagnosed with cancer, but she's playing the odds. What do you think of this?
Well, I think that it's another example of the role that genetic understanding is playing in our lives. And I also think it's drawing some really important and much-needed attention to these genes, BRCA1, or sometimes it's referred to as BRCA1, BRCA2. One of the issues surrounding these genes is a patent suit that's going before the Supreme Court very soon, where Myriad Genetics owns the gene patent to the BRCA1 gene, and the also owns the patent to the diagnostic test. So, you know, not all of us can afford to get tested for BRCA1 or BRCA2. Insurance doesn't always cover it. And I think this draws attention to the fact that we need to start thinking about, you know, how we're going to integrate genetic understanding into healthcare in a broad, reasonable, affordable way.
Is it different for somebody like Angelina Jolie or Steve Jobs, who you covered extensively in his battle with cancer? Is it different for them when they're battling it with all the financial resources they have that others do not?
I mean, I would think so. I don't know, you know, how they cover their health care, of course. But I would think so. We were always facing, there's always an out-of-pocket cost with health care. And, you know, these drugs that I write about in the book are expensive. You know, they're wonderful, but they're expensive. And these are issues that we need to address.
Do you think, Jessica, that many women will now follow what Angelina Jolie has done? Is this going to start a trend of sorts?
Well, I hope it doesn't take on as a trend because it's a very serious operation and a very serious decision that affects people not just physically but mentally and emotionally. I think each person really needs to make sure that they do what's right for them and they don't just say, well, you know, what's the big deal if I lose my breasts. It is a big deal, and it should be gone into with very careful consideration, working with a genetic counselor, and considering the statistics and also considering your personal situation.
Jessica Wapner, the book is The Philadelphia Chromosome. Many outstanding reviews as Jessica is making a nationwide swing promoting her book. One of the reviews says the story of the Philadelphia chromosome is truly the story of modern cancer biology from the very earliest description of a chromosomal abnormality in cancer cells to the development of a targeted medicine against a formerly lethal type of leukemia. Jessica Wapner stitches the whole story together with tenacity, diligence, and humor. This is a wonderful, readable, and highly informative book. Humor, that's something that's important for cancer patients, and you've taken a subject that's kind of grim and brought some life to it that is refreshing.
Well, it's life, right? I'm telling a story about science and medicine, but also people. And, you know, people go through everything, sadness and happiness and everything in between.
And you profile the people who are on the cutting edge of this technology and finding as far as treatment of this particular type of cancer.
Yes. For example, Brian Druker is one of the people who really was responsible for getting this drug made. And CML patients, certainly in the United States and throughout the world, really credit him with saving their lives. And so I really wanted to tell his story, how he fought for this drug to get made.
Well, thank you, Jessica Wapner. Congratulations on your book, and we're pleased with the reception that you're getting, not only in this program, but around the country. The Philadelphia Chromosome, a mutant gene and the quest to cure cancer at the genetic level. Appreciate your time, Jessica.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Take care. Thanks for listening, and please contribute to WRKF.